This week on Vaticano, the Church celebrates the Jubilee of Consecrated Life and Marian Spirituality, honoring religious vocations and global devotion. Explore the history of the canonization process and meet the newly declared saint, Peter Turat, the first saint from Papua New Guinea. And discover with us unpublished drawings and reflections by Saint Carlo Acutis, offering insight into his spiritual path. For this and more, Vaticano starts now. Thousands of men and women religious converged on Rome for the Jubilee of Consecrated Life, 2 days of prayer and pilgrimage that included a mass celebrated by Pope Leo XIV in St. Peter's Square.
Carissimi, carissime.
Dear brothers and sisters, the Lord, to whom you have given everything, has rewarded you with such beauty and richness, and I would like to urge you to treasure and cultivate what you have received.
The Jubilee began at the Holy Door. Pilgrims lined the Via della Conciliazione, moving in prayer towards St. Peter's. For many, including Sisters Guadalupe and Immaculata, it was a first visit to Rome.
Yes, it's our first time for this Jubilee. It's our first time and we're very excited. Well, it's a beautiful city, and for us Christians, it has something very special. That's why we're more than excited and grateful to the Lord.
Pope Leo XIV welcomed the pilgrims and presided at Mass in St. Peter's Square. Preaching on the gospel verbs, ask, seek, knock, he linked the vows of poverty, obedience, and chastity to prayerful trust and generous charity, and expressed gratitude for the service of consecrated men and women.
Yes, for me too. It's my first time coming here, and I found it wonderful because I had never been here before. I love seeing Rome and setting foot in Rome.
Sister Guadalupe comes from Mexico, Sister Immaculata from Tanzania. For them, prayer is part of every aspect of their lives, even when they're cooking.
We dedicate ourselves to make almond cake. And while we're making it, we also pray, because first of all, we offer it to the Lord through prayer. So the whole time we're praying, and even while we work, we're also entrusting everything to the Lord.
Mother, Intercessor, Queen of Heaven, these familiar titles belong to Mary, for whom the Church celebrated a special Jubilee. The Jubilee for Marian Spirituality invited Catholics from around the world to come to Rome and reflect on their devotion to the Blessed Virgin. And for some pilgrims, the Jubilee was a surprise.
We just heard about that from our tour guide, which excited me because we've been to Fatima, and I know about the statue. I followed it in procession 12 years ago. So it's very exciting, yeah, and we love her.
Pilgrims gathered at Santa Maria in Traspontina to pray the rosary before the statue of Our Lady of Fatima, which traveled from Fatima for the Global Prayer for Peace convened by Pope Leo XIV. This statue of Our Lady was designed by the guidance of Sister Lucia, one of the three shepherd children who witnessed the apparitions of Mary in Fatima, Portugal, in 1917. Since then, the statue has traveled to Rome 4 times. The first and perhaps the most famous visit was on March 25, 1984. St. John Paul II thanked Our Lady for her protection and offered her the bullet that had struck him in a failed assassination attempt on May the 13th, 1981, the anniversary of the first Marian apparition in Fatima. On that occasion, St. John Paul II entrusted the world to the Immaculate Heart of Mary in St. Peter's Square. Later, the bullet from the May the 13th, 1981 attack was set into the statue's crown.
I'm very close to her. I try to pray the rosary every day. I believe that she is the shortest way to get to Jesus because it's a mom and she knows him the best. I hope that people that are not very close to Mary, maybe think like she is the second character in the story, they can understand that she is actually very important. She's the bond that leads us to Jesus. So I hope that people that are just curious maybe can come here and just being in front of her, it's very special. You feel very loved with her.
After the prayer and public veneration of the statue of Our Lady of Fatima, it was taken in procession to St. Peter's Square. Pope Leo XIV led a prayer vigil and rosary for peace before the statue of Our Lady of Fatima, together with the pilgrims gathered for the Jubilee. The Holy Father then led a prayer as he called upon the Queen of Peace and offered her a golden rose. In his speech, Pope Leo explained that peace is not a sign of weakness.
La pace è disarmata e disarmante.
Peace is unarmed and disarming. It is not deterrence, but fraternity. It is not an ultimatum, but dialogue. Peace will not come as the result of victories over the enemy, but as the fruit of sowing justice and courageous forgiveness.
Luis, you're organizing the Vitae Festival here in Rome. Can you tell us a little bit more what exactly the Vitae Festival is all about?
Yeah, well, it's a festival for youth, for Gen Z, you know, the kids below 30 years old. It is the only festival that is focused on non-believers. Interesting thing, it's a festival that happened in Mexico before this year, in May the 3rd. We are now having the festival on October 25th, and we are going around the world with this proposal.
Why does the world need a festival like this?
Well, you know, in this very polarized world, fragmented world, our proposal or message of reconciliation is related to that. You know, the kids are, the Gen Z are a very spiritual, curious generation, but they are facing mental health challenges. We are in a very special moment of the world, several conflicts. We understand that at the end there is a spiritual crisis, and that crisis needs to be solved by the Minister of Reconciliation, that is Jesus Christ.
Who gave you the idea for this festival?
Well, we started this a long time ago in 2012 with a group of believers that we thought that we need to do something in terms of putting the message of Jesus in a language that the non-believers can understand. So it is something that comes from God, obviously, but that's our vision.
Well, so thank you so much for doing this, and we hope that really all those kids who don't know the church yet will maybe find a way to the church and to the faith through this festival. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, thanks. It is our prayer. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Up next, explore the history behind how the church has declared its saints. This is one of the most solemn events of the whole Jubilee year 2025. On Sunday, October the 19th, in St. Peter's Square, Pope Leo presides over the Eucharistic celebration with the rite of canonization of seven new saints of the Catholic Church. Ignatius Maloyan, Peter Turot, Maria Poloni, Maria Carmen Rendiles Martinez, Maria Troncati, Jose Gregorio Hernandez Cisneros, and Bartolo Longo are being elevated to sainthood.
The primary requirement was for the group to be international, ensuring that the new saints represent the universal church's holiness by coming from various regions around the world.
And so it does. Among the newly canonized, three hail from Italy, two from Venezuela, but are deeply venerated throughout Latin America, and two from Oceania and West Asia, respectively. The first, a saint from Papua New Guinea, Peter Turot, is the first in history to hail from this Pacific Island nation, while Ignatius Maloyan was an Armenian bishop and martyr who perished during the Ottoman genocide. The consistory in which these canonizations were officially confirmed, held by Pope Leo on June the 13th, had originally been convened by Pope Francis at the end of February, while he was still hospitalized. For both the diversity of the saints' origins and the bridging of two pontificates, the upcoming ceremony carries profound symbolic weight for the Church. As Monsignor Boguslav Turek, Undersecretary of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, affirms in an exclusive interview with the EWTN Vatican team inside the dicastery, it's a moment rich in meaning and unity.
When the Jubilee Year program was being established, the idea of a Day of Holiness was already considered, an event intended to include a canonization ceremony. Of course, the number and selection of new saints depend not only on the work of the congregation, but above all, on divine providence, because they are figures who have matured for this particular moment in time.
The privilege of elevating the blesseds to the honor of the altars belongs exclusively to the Pope, and thus such canonizations typically take place in the heart of the Church, the Vatican. Still, these solemn ceremonies may take place during apostolic journeys to different parts of the world, yet it's always the Pope who presides over the celebration.
Il Papa si occupa di questo fatto della canonizzazione.
Pope handles canonizations closely tied to his teaching infallibility. The formula used shows that he performs this act based on the authority of Saints Peter and Paul by virtue of apostolic authority.
However, this wasn't always the case throughout history. In the earliest centuries of the Church, it was the faithful themselves who recognized sanctity and offered prayers to those they believed to be saints. During the Middle Ages, this role gradually passed to the bishops. It was only around the 13th century that the exclusive authority to officially recognize sainthood was assumed by the Pope. The number of canonizations has increased significantly since the pontificate of John Paul II, who canonized a total of 482 saints. Benedict XVI canonized 45 blesseds, and Pope Francis almost 950. Monsignor Roberto Regoli, professor and director of the Department of Church History at the Pontifical Gregorian University, emphasizes that the current Holy Year marks a particularly meaningful and significant moment for the act of canonization.
Jubilee years originated in Rome, centered around the figures of the saints. Why did pilgrims come to Rome in the Middle Ages? Because of the tombs of Peter and Paul, where they hoped to gain the keys to heaven. During that time, many prelates, as well as kings and nobles, wished to come to Rome and be buried near Peter's tomb, believing he held the power of the keys to open paradise.
The canonization of the seven new saints stands as a notable moment in the Jubilee year, taking place at a time of widespread uncertainty and global tension.
We are living through a Jubilee year marked by the theme of hope. The new saints speak directly of hope. They address individual churches, the universal church, and all of humanity. People need this message of hope, especially amid many recent concerns, not only in Europe, but beyond, where peace and tranquility are under threat. This message is crucial. the lives of the new saints, both martyrs and confessors, who have dedicated their energy in different parts of the world, serve as seeds of hope.
Ecco, questa vita appunto è un seme di speranza.
Saint Carlo Acutis used to draw and imagine life as a leaf, a small multicolored leaf, in some parts green, in others yellow. To Carlo, green meant hope, the joy of continuing along the way, and life itself. Yellow represented what came after, such as sunset, the end, and our ultimate goal. All this was told to us by Father Giovanni Emidio Palaya, a writer and professor and theologian. He wrote a book entitled Spiritual Insights, together with Carlo's mother, Antonia Salzano Acutis. The volume gathers reflections and notes from the spiritual exercises of the first millennial saint.
This book, obviously, is a book that required many years of work for me personally. And from the mother of Blessed Carlo Acutis and his father, Miss Andrea, also helped, and all the family took part. Because I had the opportunity to meet almost all of Carlo's schoolmates, the teachers, the relatives, and we tried to collect Carlo's personal notes from the computer. Above all, the testimonies of the priests who accompanied him.
In this book, you can find themes of spiritual exercises that are always valid, even if it's only a day of prayer. For example, the Ten Commandments. Because as Saint Carlo Acutis used to say, we need to not only take care of the body, but of the soul.
This volume is particular, compared with others, gathers various experiences, notes, annotations, testimonies, and drawings that Carlo produced in one of the most beautiful places in Christendom, which is La Verna, where St. Francis received the stigmata. Carlo would go to La Verna for 15 to 30 days. He attended Mass twice. He read and meditated on the Word of God and had with him a booklet of the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola, printed in Milan by the San Fedele community. And he learned very early that just as we exercise the body and work hard to have a good physique, good health, we also have a spiritual organism, and we must learn to use it and to value it with the grace of God, the sacraments, the word.
Utilizzarlo e a valorizzarlo con la grazia di Dio, I sacramenti, la parola.
The book is particularly precious as it contains unpublished drawings by Carlo, such as his understanding of the leaf that helps us to understand better this new saint of the universal church.
Venne richiesto a Carlo.
Carlo was asked to represent his life with an image, and he drew a leaf that is in some parts green. Green, as the book recalls, evokes life, evokes hope. We know, scientists tell us today, that we always tend to seek the color green. It is a color that reassures us. But yellow also appears on the leaf, which no longer recalls life, but sunset, the end. What struck me immediately was that he had surrounded the leaf with almost a burst of rays, a light. That is, we, as human persons created in the image and likeness of God, shine if we are in the grace of God, if we are nourished by God.
The last part of the book is dedicated to the words of Our Lady during her apparitions on earth. Because, as Carlo used to say, if heaven has gone to the trouble and come down to earth, we must pay attention to it.
Carlo was particularly fascinated by the apparitions of Fatima. And Carlo understood that devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary has a very precise purpose. It is not only about receiving communion on the first five Saturdays of the month, and then going to confession, receiving communion, and meditating on one mystery of the Rosary. Rather, he had intuited that by meditating on the mystery of the life of Christ and of Mary in the Rosary, one ends up falling in love with Mary.
After the break, we journey to Papua New Guinea to discover the legacy of its first saint, Peter Turat. Sunday, October the 19th, is a day of great joy and celebration for the people of Papua New Guinea. For the first time in history, an indigenous saint to the island, Peter Turat, is being canonized by Pope Leo XIV.
They are more than happy, and they are very delighted, and it's a first time for us to have a local saint.
Rudolf Pamat is one of only two students from Papua New Guinea currently studying in Rome. He's in his third year of theology at the Pontifical Urbaniana University. For Rudolf, the canonization of Peter Turat carries deep personal meaning.
I come from the Archdiocese of Rabaul, where Peter Turat was martyred. The Feast of Blessed Peter Turat was instituted by Pope John Paul II. That's on the 7th July. So I come to know more about Blessed Peter Turat when we celebrate the feast.
Born in 1912 and raised in a devout Christian household, Peter Turat began religious studies at a young age and was commissioned as a catechist by German missionaries. Known for his spiritual strength, compassion, and unwavering commitment to teaching, Peter quickly became a pillar of his local community.
Peter Turat è una bella figura, soprattutto una figura.
Peter Turat is a beautiful figure, a husband, a father, and a catechist. He comes from the very first generation of Christians in Papua New Guinea. His parents were among the first to be baptized.
During the Japanese occupation of Papua New Guinea in the 1940s, both foreign missionaries and Catholic Papuans were imprisoned and executed, and Christianity was outlawed. Despite this, Peter Turat continued baptizing children, leading prayers, and ministering to the sick and elderly. In 1945, he publicly denounced the promotion of polygamy, which the Japanese had encouraged in order to ingratiate themselves with local tribes. Peter Turat was then arrested, and after 2 months in prison, was secretly executed by lethal injection.
Peter Turat was martyred by defending the sacrament of marriage. And it's a time to renew our commitment to, like, for couples. It's a time now to renew their commitment to each other, to the sacrament of marriage, and for all of us to renew our commitment to God in our state of life, like religious, laity, and of course the clergy.
Peter Turat was beatified by Pope John Paul II in Port Moresby, the capital of Papua New Guinea, in 1995. Now, with his canonization at St. Peter's Square, alongside six other new saints from around the world, decades of national devotion and recognition are finally being fulfilled.
It's surely a moment of great joy. It's also a moment of pride, because it shows that the Universal Church recognizes and cherishes the treasures found in national churches.
Faith in Papua New Guinea remains vibrant and alive, with Christianity being the official state religion and Catholicism being the largest denomination, even though the first Catholic missionaries arrived on the remote shores of Yule Island just 150 years ago. During Pope Francis's apostolic journey to Oceania in 2024, our EWTN team had the privilege of visiting the site where Catholicism first took root, and where the very first Mass was celebrated by missionaries in 1885.
Well, At this point of time, there are still missionaries, and thanks be to God, they are still helping us, the church in Papua New Guinea. And we also have indigenous priests, brothers and sisters as well.
Today, the majority of priests serving Papua New Guinea's 9 million people are indigenous. And after his time in Rome, Rudolf Pamat looks forward to returning home and serving his people.
My dream is to be with the people, wherever my bishop wants me to go.
And now with St. Peter Turat as a heavenly intercessor, he'll have the strength and blessing to fulfill his mission.